Well, welcome to a meeting of the Ways here on KKUP, and we have a special guest for you today, courtesy of our listener supporters, and I want to welcome to a meeting of the Ways, Mr. Aaron Stern. Welcome.
Thank you, Diane. Thank you.
And let me introduce Mr. Stern. He has a lot to be introduced about, but let me just say that he's the founder and president of the Academy for the Love of Learning. And with Lama Tsomo of the Namchuk Foundation, Mr. Stern is going to be co-leading an online weekend workshop coming up focused on bringing your spiritual practice and inner work into everyday life and staying connected with your true self and others. It's called Waking Up in Community, Taking Your Spiritual Practice into the World. It will be November 6th through the 8th. We'll be talking about that and more. For more information, you can visit namchuk.org or aloveoflearning.org, and you'll find your way there, or Waking Up in Community, you'll find it there. So let me introduce Aaron Stern. He's the president and founder of the Academy for the Love of Learning. The Academy actively finds solutions and develops practices aimed at helping people to become better at being human beings. Aaron Stern is a musician, teacher, and internationally recognized consultant on learning. For over 25 years, he's worked nationally and internationally helping organizations to reinvent institutional paradigms that better facilitate learning and transformation. The Academy offers a variety of training for educators and has a research arm that follows developments in educational philosophy. The Academy also maintains a library of research that catalogs where and how schooling and learning is being reimagined in vital ways. That's a lot. I've heard Aaron Stern from the Namchuk Foundation, folks who have taken your Waking Up in Community workshops, and I'm going to disclose that I'm taking it and I'm paying the full fare, and it's very reasonable. They'll do something for everybody. That's why we talk about these things that are really accessible to our listenership. The folks I've spoken to said that you co-create an experience that's life-changing. Your website says that your work is primarily, or a big focus of it, is developing a body of work, pedagogy, and learning methodologies that are the center for the love of learning. It's hard for me to get a sense of what you and the Academy do. Maybe a way to begin is for you to tell us about you and the Academy's learning as practice approach. From the website, it says your trainings help people to become better at human beings, and I suspect a lot of other things as well.
Well, thank you. That's quite an introduction. I'm kind of old, so, you know. I'm 71, I guess I am now, so that, I guess I should have accomplished about that much by this time in my life. let's see where to begin. What's at the very center of the Academy is a kind of an attempt that I've been making for most of my adult life to tease learning apart from education, and specifically the learning spirit from education. It's a decoupling of the two. A dear friend of mine who lives in the Bay Area, Matt Fox, you may have known, you know of him or his work.
Oh, yeah, he's very well known.
Yes, of course. So Matthew likes to say that learning is to education what spirituality is to religion. And I'll say it again. Learning is to education what spirituality is to religion. And in my view, I've been very deeply concerned about the teasing apart of learning from education, because the learner in us, in a way, is co-opted by the educational industrial complex that we all sort of enter into as children and become part of. And the intention, it may be noble, it's to socialize us and educate us with a certain set of shared understandings and capacities, let's say. But the learner in us is so vast, and in a way we sort of put the learner into this kind of small closet and says, here's everything there is to learn and know. And we kind of go to sleep, unfortunately, and we begin to receive the information passively, get tested on it, and then we decide whether or not we are successful and get a diploma. And unfortunately, what ends up happening is that learning spirit gets sort of put by the wayside, shut down, or it doesn't have the chance to really fully express. And I think that the implications of that are profound and far-reaching. Excuse me. First of all, what we're learning and what we're being taught, I should say, is information that has taken us to the brink that it actually is the sovereign learner, that seeking out learning experiences that actually help us become the human beings that we want to be and know inside of us that we want to be. So we, in a way, it becomes a bit of a distraction and becomes quite confusing, because at a certain point we begin to think, well, we're educated, now what? And we're sort of all dressed up with nowhere to go to participate in an economic reality that is quickly changing, to say the least, unsustainably so. And our schools are kind of, well, if you look at the mission statement of the public education, the U.S. Department of Public Education, what you quickly see is that it's meant to be preparing us to compete in a global economy. If you listen to Matthew Fox, he says that education is to help us find our place in the universe. So those are two very different frames. So I'm trying to tease it apart and begin to reconnect, almost like a hologram, and center, bring into the foreground the part of us that learns, that opens into life, moves toward the other, moves toward the not yet known, out of a natural tendency and proclivity to learn, and that's vast. So, what the academy is a place where we're experimenting and developing and practicing and sharing with others methodologies that help us piece apart those two things and also activate the learning spirit and learn about what it feels like to be in a whole-bodied human learning thing that we each are, and we become better acquainted with what it feels like and what it looks like and what the experiences of learning are when we're really opening ourselves to learning and not so much about defining a bunch of outcomes that we're seeking to learn. Does that help?
Yeah, no, thank you for that. And it seems like most of us have been educated in a paradigm where we're memorizing and regurgitating, and then there's kind of this, there is a, you know, and more. I was going to ask you some more about that, but I thought maybe also it'd be interesting for you to tell us that who comes to the academy and seeks your consultancy, because I looked at your website, it looks like a wide variety of people, as well as educators and people like that, teachers, as you might imagine, just listening, as well as you're involved with communities of concern. But I've got to remind our listeners that the views and opinions on this program are not necessarily that of the staff, management, and other listeners. We thank you for joining in today, courtesy of our listener supporters. And just want to let you know our special guest is Aaron Stern, the president and founder of the Academy for the Love of Learning. They've got a website, aloveoflearning.org, and he is going to be out of, Aaron Stern is leading a workshop with Lama Tsomo November 6th through 8th online. He calls it a virtual experience called Waking Up in Community, Taking Your Spiritual Practice into the World. And for more info, you can visit aloveoflearning.org or namchak.org. So anyway, back to if you can give us a hint of the varieties of people that you shepherd through this process.
Many, many, many different contexts that we work in groups and age groups, and some of our work is intergenerational. Some of it is aimed at particular age groups. So, for example, one of the programs is called Life Songs. And that program is a program that weds artists and young kids and people at end of life. And the goal is, with young children meeting the elders, to help the elders bring their stories out into the world. And then the artists help render them into music. And they turn them into musical performative pieces. Often the elders participate in them, sometimes from their wheelchairs. Often these are done in the context of a nursing home, for example. Not always. Sometimes it's an artist and a kid working with an elder right in their homes. But the goal is really to bring the story forward and to provide an opportunity for the elder to be seen and recognized for a life, and to have the opportunity to bring their life story out into the world. It is a powerful, powerful example of a learning practice, because the kids are learning how to connect with people at end of life. And as I'm sure you know, in our world, at least in this country and Western world, mm-hmm. generally, there's kind of a denial of death, the it's a wonderful book that's written with that title.
Yes.
So this is a chance to connect with end of life. And this becomes especially important to use the word pedagogy before. One of the problems that I've recognized over the years is that when we meet something very different and sometimes experience the kind of disorientation that we experience when we meet the stranger or meet profoundly disorienting experiences, let's say, we don't really do very well at handling them. Very often we kind of shut down, we become frightened, we turn back towards ourselves and kind of draw a circle around us and just say, I'm going to stay over here. And unfortunately, what that can do is limit our ability to meet difference and come to know and bring us to the edge of the unknown, let's say. So by bringing young with people at end of life, they're developing a relationship with something that is just so potentially disorienting, the end of life, death, that's end of life moment. Am I still there? I'm so sorry.
Yeah, you were breaking up a bit.
Okay, I thought I heard a funny sound. So what happens for these kids is they begin to massage the boundaries of what they can move toward in life. And it opens them to the possibility of moving towards something extremely challenging and difficult, developing a relationship, and actually staying quite present and grounded and centered. And they begin to expand their capacity and identities as human beings so as to be able to embrace the very end of life. And here they are at the beginning of life. So the teaching is huge for them, both in terms of the being deeply moved by the stories that they hear and that they help put into a musical poetic form. But they also are learning how to go towards difficult situations and difficult conversations and remaining soft and entering into grief and entering into the capacity to expand when in the midst of challenging, difficult, disorienting experiences.
Well, that sounds like a rich experience.
That's learning.
Yeah, rich experience for everybody there. I noticed that your website, you're kind of making the pivot that so many groups are to offer online training. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, you know, people,
yes,
I guess in the past had to travel to New Mexico or wherever you were.
Mm-hmm. It's a big thing. It's a very difficult challenge, I think, for all of us because, you know, I believe in people coming together face to face. A lot happens when we get to see each other and meet each other. So we're learning our way forward, and we do look forward to a time when we can come back together in real live contact in the same rooms together. And we're also learning about, you know, what is our unique contribution that we can make online, and we're finding our way forward with it. So right, we have been offering things like Wisdom Circle, for example, which is a program we offer to public school teachers. And at the time that we've offered it in the past, for the past, let's say, 10 years, I think, it took about 10 years we've offered that program, there have been live gatherings, very intimate, teachers finding the threads of learning that could help keep them stay alive in classrooms versus pedagogy that can, let's say, how can we do better at, I'm going to be a little dramatic here and say pouring information down into the minds of children. How can teachers stay alive themselves as learners and what brought them into teaching in the first place so that they can remain passionate, engaged, and involved in learning themselves? And by doing that, then in a way they transmit the learning spirit to children even in the midst of those very challenging situations that we find ourselves in our schools. Well, that was all live. And now, of course, teachers, certainly in New Mexico, for example, are not inside schools and classrooms. They're online. So they're dealing with another set of problems. And so we're offering them the Wisdom Circle protocol that we developed so many years, giving them that as gifts. And at the same time, we're beginning to offer some experiments to teachers who are actually gathering by Zoom and beginning to find find out what it means to learn from that platform, not being isolated from each other, yet not being in a room, and figuring out, you know, what value and what benefit can we bring. So that's an example, and we're turning it into real learning exchanges. And rather than offering it as a program that we think we know something about, we're offering it truly as a learning exchange, and we're all trying to find out together how these programs that we've offered for so many years can adapt. So in a way, we're in a co-creative moment with our students, which is great.
So we're
and that's happening in other places.
Uh-huh. So we're in California. And if you've just joined us on a meeting of the ways, our guest is Aaron Stern, president and founder of the Academy for the Love of Learning. We're in California. Most of our listeners, I suspect, are here in California. And teachers and educators who aren't in New Mexico are listening in, can they contact you and participate in that program?
Yes, they can. We have a team that's preparing ourselves now to be able to bring those programs to other. In fact, we'll be offering some small mini grants starting in 21. We're not ready quite yet to do that, but in the second semester, beginning in 21, we'll start offering some small mini grants to help teachers that would like to bring the Wisdom Circle protocol into their into small groups of teachers. You know, it's about intimacy, and it's about seeing each other eyeball to eyeball. On these little Zoom postage stamps or whatever format people are using. But it also is about developing a habit, and teachers are isolated from each other by and large in our traditional public schools. Mm-hmm. You know, they're mechanistic models. They come out of the Industrial Revolution, our schools. And you can sort of see the factory model. The doors open, the bell rings, kids come marching out.
Right. Park your lunch bag.
The teachers need to talk to each other. So these Wisdom Circles make that possible.
Seems like now parents and educators have one of the greatest challenges ever. We have people listening who have children that all of a sudden are being homeschooled effectively. I found out from my neighbors, you just can't put a 6-year-old in front of a tablet or computer and expect them to follow along. You know, I know grandparents that are, you know, sitting with their grandkids, helping them through the school day. Do you have any advice for folks who are in this situation? They're worried about their kids getting a good education by sitting in front of a computer. You know, televised, maybe a better way to say it, a more skillful way is, you know, televised education versus in person, because in person has its limitations, but televised has another set of issues.
Right. Yes, it does. I mean, there's a wonderful book called Endangered Minds that was written quite some time ago about the impact of televised anything on the brains and the developing brains of children. I believe it was called Endangered Minds. And much research has been done since. You know, you're talking to somebody here who didn't love what happened in our schools in terms of the, as I mentioned earlier, the pouring of a lot of information and testing.
Yeah, testing, teach to the test.
Preparing kids to be part of a competitive economic world. It's not that there's anything wrong with earning a living, believe me, but it's misguided to some degree. And I do understand that we all need economic mobility, but I think we can all see that there are many issues, or at least yeah, it's a complex conversation to have here about what is sustainable, what is the meaning of life. You know, it leads to very, very deep questions. And but what I can say is, I don't know that if the goal is for parents to try to replicate what happens in schools, sitting at home with children, I think that may be the wrong question to try to answer. I think it's more, what can we do, given that we're in these same places called home together, and the kids do have a certain amount of learning that they have to do in front of computers. There's a whole other set of possibilities that arise here. And that is to spend some time asking children what they love, or helping them to find something that they love. And then parents getting to know, who are you and what do you love? And how can I help support you exploring it and finding out about it? It's like finding out. How do we help you find out? and then suddenly parents can join with children in exploring things that are actually motivated by the child's desire to learn. And that is a very different place for motivation to be. It placed in the child the sovereignty of the learner and their own interest. And there are many, many, many examples of, in fact, we have a program that we developed called Inspire Santa Fe. It was about wedding children to mentors in the community, and children would be able to identify an area of personal interest that they really wanted to know something about and develop a whole mentoring relationship with an expert in that field. And they would spend a year developing and end up with these beautiful projects that they would offer into the community. Well, we can't do that full-blown stuff right now because of COVID, and we all have to be quite careful. But parents who are living under the same roof with their children can get to know what the kids love and actually make that into a whole exploration and revisit it daily and develop ways to explore it together. And, you know, in a way, parents maybe they go back and remember, what would I have loved to have happened for me as a kid? Maybe that would become a kind of, instruction manual and begin to bring out to their children. It's not easy. Please know I know that. It's terribly difficult. People are working from home while also parenting from home, while also teaching from home.
That's a wonderful suggestion, though. What a wonderful idea. I want to thank you so much for joining us. I want to let our listeners know again that you're listening to, this is a rare opportunity to hear Aaron Stern, the president and founder of the Academy for the Love of Learning. And this academy and Mr. Stern find solutions and develop practices aimed at helping people to become better at learning, but also better human beings. And he's going to be available the weekend of November 6th. There'll be a three-day workshop, Waking Up in Community, Taking Your Spiritual Practice into the World, November 6th through the 8th. I don't think, that because we're talking about it on the air, you've got assurances that financial costs will not be a barrier if you contact the organizers in advance. For more information, you can visit namchak.org or aloveoflearning.org, or you could probably Google Waking Up in Community and Aaron Stern. I want to let people know, too, that you're listening to KKUP, courtesy of our listener supporters. And I just had kind of a last question. I was in conversation with one of the key people at your organization who kind of helped me frame some of my questions, because it was kind of hard to figure out the vastness of what you do from the website. And so they kindly helped me, Hannah kindly shepherded me through. And it sounds like you've got some emerging work that's going on, and the best way to maybe get you to talk about it would just be to say if you could talk about how your work in the Academy's trainings are pivoting, or maybe have always done this, address systematic racism.
That's a very important question, and all of us, I'm sure your listeners would agree, have a responsibility to find our way into moving out. I'm speaking now myself as a white male, moving out of being, you know, in these isolating, it's just awful. We have to find our ways to each other. And there's so much to learn and so much benefit to being in the presence of others and people who don't look like me, don't speak like me, and don't think like me. I'm in the minority in this world, and I feel honored and graced to be able to be in conversations with people who don't look like me. So I think in the spirit of that, we have begun in our ways connecting with people. We have a fellowship, for example, that is all people of color. I threw myself into it because I'm a learner. I can't not be. And so I'm in it with a group of folks who are Native Americans, Hispanic Americans from different parts of the Spanish-speaking world, the whole gay, lesbian part of the spectrum that is part of this fellowship. And the thing is that we are learning together, and we're learning about learning, and we're learning about what different practices sit within different communities. And there are things that we've learned over the many years that we've been in existence that we want to share more broadly, that rather than disseminating it and selling it as packages and doing it in those kinds of more traditional ways. We're actually wanting to create exchanges and resourcing exchanges so that we have the chance to share what we have, and we also have the chance to hear what other people have and find out what do we have in common and how can we lift all of that up so that we are lifting it up and sharing and learning from multiple perspectives, which makes it bigger. It becomes more like a movement rather than one isolated group of people. And so that's a very simple way of trying to explain it, but it's actually quite complex. And it also, at the core of it, is human beings meeting each other in difference. And that's not easy.
Yes.
And it's yet what, there's just nothing else more important to be doing right now, period. And so we're, all of our programs now are moving in that direction. It's absolutely essential. And, you know, it's exciting, it's unnerving, it's sometimes messy, and it's real, and it's human, and it's what we have to know how to do.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing your work with us and making us know about, letting us be available, letting it be available, your upcoming retreat, Waking Up in Community. I want to ask if there's anything else you want to tell our listeners today before we sign off.
Well, just a little plug for NAMSOC. It's just an amazing, amazing organization doing just extraordinary work. And I really wholeheartedly invite you to this retreat. It's Lama Tsoma and I have partnered. We've known each other for a really long time. We're like a brother and sister, and in certain kinds of ways, and working with core insights that are deeply compatible and slightly different, which is perfect. So learning as waking up is what we'll be exploring, and really, how is it as we meet each other in difference, it becomes an opportunity to wake up inside, become better at being a human being. And to me, what that means is more capable of bringing love and goodness that sits at the core of all of us into the world, in action, in relationship.
Wonderful.
So there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for joining us. And until next time, hope you'll come back. Until next time, peace be with you.
Yes, thank you, and you.